And on today's Windy City Queercast, Flitter. What do you do on a rainy Sunday? Well, Stephen Rader and I head downtown to dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun- something I haven't done since I was 10 years old. Ooh. And I'm also doing something else for the first time. A virgin, at most, at least this one thing. And we have Richard Knight Jr.'s review of State of Play, lots of news and what's going on in the entertainment scene. I love spending a Sunday with Steven. Sunday at the theater with Steven.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Steven Rader.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Show number 298 going down Lakeshore Drive, LSD. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Steven Rader.
And we are rainy days and Sundays always get.
Is it Sundays or Mondays? Mondays and Mondays.
Oh,
Mondays.
Okay, good. then that doesn't apply.
We are rewriting the song.
I'm so excited. We are on our way to a chorus line downtown Chicago. And I just picked Steven up in Boys Town. I came from Girls Town to Boys Town. Now we go downtown.
Boys Town. When you're alone.
Exactly. I'm wondering, this is the first podcast from my new car. And in my old car, whenever we podcasted, it sounded like
so I'm hoping, it's so nice.
I'm hoping that the new shocks in the car.
Oh, the shocks are nice.
And you know, I'm really geared up. I was listening to Meryl Streep do The Winner Takes It All from Mamma Mia. Just, oh, it's a good, like, grab-em-by-the-ball song.
It's the gayest thing I've ever heard.
It's the gayest show ever. And have you ever seen A Chorus Line?
I've never seen the stage version. I've only seen the movie.
Oh, my God.
The movie, which I've heard is inferior to the stage version.
Very. It's very inferior, but
you know, being a little boy in Tennessee who'd never seen A Chorus Line, and this movie comes out, and there's that great monologue at the end. It was like, oh!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. It was the gayest thing ever for my 10-year-old little sensibility. My first experience in the theater ever, not in a high school production that my brother did or that the local high school did.
Was Chorus Line.
Was A Chorus Line.
Wow.
My parents for Christmas in
1980. Oh, my God.
For Christmas, I got four tickets to A Chorus Line. My brother got four tickets to, I mean,
I got four tickets to Annie. My brother got four tickets to Chorus Line. And A Chorus Line came first. We were seeing A Chorus Line first, and then we were seeing Annie.
And your brother got Annie?
No, I got Annie. He got A Chorus Line.
Okay,
sorry,
now
I'm saying
we're,
that wrong.
Now, now we're
really?
Somewhere.
But this
now
was like, but this somewhere. Is like what happened when like my brother would get the, you know,
the Barbie doll.
Leif Garrett's album, and I would get Sean Cassidy. I far preferred Leif Garrett. But anyhow.
I did too because he was hung.
Hung and cute.
Hung.
So we go to see A Chorus Line, and I knew nothing about it. Neither did my parents, obviously.
Oh, my God.
And
it ain't Annie.
It is not PG-13.
We got Annie.
It's... They were never so happy when they went to Annie the next night. But
but
we went
Christ.
To see A Chorus Line, and I remember where I sat in the theater, like, you know, that concept of, like, remembering my perspective, even on the whole affair.
Yep.
But I was so overcome. I knew something dangerous was happening on stage at moments because it was so raw and so vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm 10. I don't know what gay is. I don't know that my dad saw me in a drag show. I don't know what any of that means.
Yeah.
I'm in hose. I'm in pantyhose.
Yeah.
You know, but I just knew it seemed so vulnerable and so scary to him.
That monologue.
And,
That monologue.
And all of the songs, but I walked around. But my parents had also given us gave us the albums.
Oh, wow.
And so we had the albums.
Your parents?
I know.
Tennessee.
God love them.
My Lord.
Started my love. It's their fault. It's their fault that I'm a homo.
Their fault. Oh, that's all you need to tell them.
It was a Chorus Line.
There goes the inheritance. There's
exactly.
Everything.
But I remember coming home and I would not stop singing Dance 10 Looks 3 to my parents. Absolute horror. Of course, I got Annie and I sang all of it too, and I remember it as well. But I don't remember distinctly like where I was in the theater. You know, here's the difference. In A Chorus Line, I was like, I felt so much emotion, and in Annie, I sat there going, I could do that.
I could do that.
I could do that better. I'm 10, and why am I not auditioning?
It's a hard knock life.
Exactly. I wanted to be an orphan.
Now all those bitches were crazy.
But I have not seen this show on stage since I was 10 years old.
Here's how gay I am.
Uh-huh.
I was dating this girl in high school, Lauren Phillips, if you're out there, call me. And Lauren, who I've heard is now a lesbian, if you're not Lauren, whatever.
Of course she is. She dated you.
There you go. Exactly. I had the power. So, but she, I remember introducing her to the movie version of this when it came out on, like, on the VHS, on a top-loading VHS.
At least it was a laser disc.
And I remember her watching the monologue from the second girl. Is it Val? That's not Val. I forgot the name
What's
of the character.
Story?
But
the
second
feel
girl
the wind
in
rush?
The... In the
nothing?
Oh, in the ballet. You know, she talks about different is nice, but it sure isn't pretty.
Uh-huh.
Pretty is what it's about.
Yeah.
I never met anyone who was different who couldn't figure that out.
Yeah.
And Lauren was laying in my arms
sobbing.
For watching, sobbing.
Yeah.
Sobbing because that hit absolute home for her.
Yeah.
Like, that is what is my relationship with my mother. My mother says, "Oh no, but you're different, and I'm not pretty. And all I want to be is pretty."
Yeah.
Oh my God. So all these themes in this show, really.
It truly was, you know, I mean, Michael Bennett, God love him.
We lost something big there.
We just continually lost so many great artists. We continue to, you know, I think we continue to lose these pioneers. I mean, on up to, I was
like, Michael Bennett. I mean, look at Michael Bennett. We're talking about Choreography of Follies. We're talking about Chorus Line from the beginning. We're talking about Dreamgirls.
Yep.
We're talking about some, and then ballroom, which we'll forgive
like,
him.
It's like Michael Bennett and Jerome Robbins, you know,
both
gave
assholes.
Us like, both assholes, both egomaniacs, both brilliant, fucking brilliant, gave us such a language and perspective and expression without words that were quote unquote scary. Well, Michael Bennett did with Chorus Line had words, but gave us, without actually going there and pushing the envelope and bringing the gay experience to the forefront. And you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to, Richard Knight Jr. is going to be doing a review of Every Little Step, which is a documentary about doing this revival and about the whole process of A Chorus Line. And
they're interviewing, the documentary interviews
original cast.
Well, no, they interview people who were auditioning for the revival, which is fascinating to learn about the people who are auditioning for a show that's about auditioning for a show. I mean, that to me is amazing. Oh my God, here they come.
We're in the city.
There's my ride.
There's a big engine right there.
There's my, it's firemen.
It's firemen. So we've got news today. We've got, I have some really big news, and all I'll say is that I have joined the social networking world.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to talk about having a skirt on. That's what I
do have a skirt on. I dressed up for Steven Rayner for the theater. So anyhow, we're going to go in the theater here. We're going to park and go into the theater, dash into the theater at the last second.
And are you going to tell them about what social network you're on? We wait till later.
It rhymes with flitter. There you go.
Oh, sweet.
Which is
Jesus.
Something my
you
mom
didn't.
Says.
You didn't.
It's my mom talks about says, oh, flitter. So anyhow, I have joined the Twitter world.
Why?
Because
why?
I can stalk Helen Mirren and Demi Moore simultaneously.
Oh, Jesus.
So much better than Facebook. So anyhow, we will turn this on again after some news and Richard Knight Jr.'s review of State of Play. Mm-hmm. I think that's the film. And then we'll be back and tell you what we think of Donna.
You want to learn to play tennis in no time? TNT. Chicago's Midtown Tennis Club has the country's only patented tennis teaching program to turn beginners into players in just 3 short weeks, with sessions beginning May 2nd. During Tennis in No Time, participants will learn the basics of the game, including forehand, backhand, and serve in a fun group atmosphere. Best of all, Tennis in No Time is affordable, even in today's economic climate. Enrollment in TNT costs $115 and includes a 3-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, invitations to 2 social parties, and 9 hours of instruction from the country's best pros for only $115. That's less than $20 for each hour and a half lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in the heart of Chicago's Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information on Tennis in No Time, call 773-235-2300 or visit midtown.com/Chicago. TNT. It's dynamite.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. New York Governor David A. Patterson announced this past week that he would introduce a bill to legalize same-sex marriage. Patterson compared the situation of the LGBT community to other groups throughout history that have been excluded and have fought for equality, such as blacks, Jews, and women. He called for an end to a legal system that has systematically discriminated against all of them.
The ACLU sent a letter to Tennessee school officials that as many as 107 public school districts could be illegally preventing students from accessing online information about GLBT issues. The ACLU gives the districts and the Tennessee Schools Cooperative until April 29th to devise a plan to restore access to the GLBT sites. Otherwise, the union will file a lawsuit.
Retired U.S. Army General James Lindsay has warned that there will be mass resignations from the military if Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed. Lindsay stated, "We don't need a study commission to know that tensions are inevitable and in conditions offering little or no privacy, increasing the stress of daily military life. Everyone can serve America in some way, but there is no constitutional right to serve in the military."
A new gay Republican group, Geo Proud, launched as the National Log Cabin Republicans kicked off its annual convention in D.C. Jimmy LaSalvia, a former Log Cabin policy director, is Geo Proud's executive director. The group intends to focus on Republican issues such as tax cuts, a stronger national defense, and privatization of Social Security.
Former Illinois Senate candidate Ellen Keyes made strong statements about Mary Cheney, the openly gay daughter of former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. In an interview with Sirius OutQ Satellite Radio, Keyes said same-sex marriage is based simply on the premise of selfish hedonism. When the host replied, "I don't think Dick Cheney would like to hear that about his daughter," Keyes replied, "Dick Cheney may or may not like to hear the truth, but it can be spoken." Some Republican leaders have criticized Keyes for his remarks.
In Nevada, Republican Governor Jim Gibbons has said that he will veto the domestic partner bill now under consideration in the state Senate. The bill must be approved by April 21st or it will be considered dead for the remainder of the legislative session.
Hoping to recoup church property and millions of dollars in endowed funds, the National Episcopal Church has filed a lawsuit against a local group that split from the church late last year. The group, led by Bishop Jack Eicher, has opposed the Episcopal Church for accepting a gay bishop and same-sex unions, as well as ordaining female priests.
Eve Kosofsky Sedgwick, who has been cited as one of the founders of queer theory, passed away April 12th at the age of 58 of breast cancer.
And in world news, Matthew Mitchum, the Australian diver who won a gold medal at the Beijing Olympics, believes he lost sponsorship deals because he's openly gay. He said, "I haven't experienced any homophobia in sport, but I'm hoping I'm not experiencing any in the corporate world because I haven't had any companies rushing to sponsor me." Mitchum, 20, received the highest mark for an individual dive at the Olympic Games.
Japan has given the okay for its gay and lesbian citizens to get married abroad. The Justice Ministry has instructed local authorities to issue documents pertaining to marriage to same-sex couples planning to wed in foreign countries.
And in entertainment news, get ready to hear Auf Wiedersehen from Heidi Klum. The Weinstein Company, NBC Universal, and Lifetime have settled their lawsuits, resulting in Project Runway's sixth season premiering on Lifetime later this year. However, NBC Universal's Bravo will actually premiere its own new series, The Fashion Show, on May 7th.
Actor William Hurt apologized in response to abuse claims his ex-girlfriend Marlee Matlin of the L Word made against him this week. While promoting her new book, I'll Scream Later, Matlin said that while dating Hurt in the late 80s, quote, "I always had fresh bruises every day." Hurt responded, "I did and do apologize for any pain I caused, and I know we have both grown. I wish Marlee and her family nothing but good." The two starred in the award-winning Children of a Lesser God.
The influential pop act Pet Shop Boys have returned with, yes, their 10th album. In a career spanning over two decades, the duo of Neil Tennant and Chris Lowe have created some of the most recognizable hits in the world, such as West End Girls, Being Boring, and New York City Boy, and have sold over 30 million records. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
It's spring, time for flowers to bloom and lovers to love and the Joffrey Ballet to dance. See the Joffrey Ballet spectacular spring program filled with romantic stories of young lovers, angels in a starry sky, and a wedding, all told in glorious dance. Featuring Christopher Wheeldon's Carousel, set to music from the Broadway classic. Just 9 performances, April 29th through May 10th. Call 312-902-1500 or order online at Ticketmaster.com.
Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. In State of Play, a crack team of actors headed by Russell Crowe and Rachel McAdams enact the story of a major newspaper struggling to survive under the guise of a political thriller. The film, directed by Last King of Scotland's Kevin MacDonald, is fast, taut, and stuffed with murky plot points. But like other fast-paced newspaper-centered movies, All the President's Men, The Paper, Deadline USA, Absence of Mouth, even His Girl Friday, it's the thrill of the reporting and putting the pieces together rather than the thrill of the chase that revs up the picture. Crowe plays a life-experienced reporter who helps along feisty newbie McAdams. In years past, this character would be a plucky upstart cub reporter eager to show off her abilities to her cynical superior. Now she's a blogger. The movie, more than anything else, is a chance for the filmmakers to put those inexperienced internet amateurs so enamored of gossip and quick, dirty, career-destroying stories based on innuendo, if I could speak, in their place. Look, this is a real story, not open to interpretation, he lectures the upstart blogger early on. And as she sees up close the dirty reality of old-fashioned reporting at work, we know eventually she's going to come around and say something like, "This story is too important for readers not to feel newsprint under their fingers as they read it." I have written for newspapers for over 20 years, and I ain't thrilled about the Wolfpack mentality and anything-goes rules that these mostly inexperienced, snarky bloggers operate under, thanks to the speed and ease of posting on the Internet. That McDonald's movie really overdoes this, eventually losing its enjoyable thriller aspects as it meanders off into propaganda for the once mighty newspaper biz. By the time State of Play ends, with Crow filing one of those weighty, time-honored stories, albeit without an editor giving it a look-see, I felt as if the movie was one giant product endorsement paid for by the National Newspaper Association. I'm Richard Knight, Jr., and that's your Net at the Movies Minute.
Now's your chance to see the mega-hit Broadway musical, Legally Blonde, right here.
Oh, my God!
Take the journey with Elle Woods at the show New York Magazine calls a feel-good song and dance juggernaut. Legally Blonde.
Begins May 12th for 4 weeks only at the Ford Center Oriental Theater. Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweez.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 20th, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Remy Bumbo Theater Company presents Harold Pinter's mysterious masterpiece, Old Times, starring Nick Sands, Linda Gillum, and Jenny McKnight. Enter into a daring game of competing memories where everything is at risk. Old Times runs now through May 31st at the Greenhouse Theater Center, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets and information, visit remybumbo.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet, now extended at the Apollo Theater. Don't miss this show. For tickets to Million Dollar Quartet, visit Ticketmaster.com.
American Theater Company, in association with About Face Theater, presents Hedwig and the Angry Inch by John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask, an award-winning rock musical about a young East German who gives up a little part of himself in order to escape communism for freedom in the U.S. Hedwig and the Angry Inch is playing now through May 17th at American Theater Company. Tickets at atcweb.org. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, this is Amy Sedaris, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Dance 10 looks 3, and I'm still on unemployment. Dancing for my own enjoyment. That ain't it, kid. That ain't it, kid. Dance 10 looks 3. It's like to die. Left the theater and called the doctor for my appointment to buy tits and ass. Bought myself a fancy pair. Tightened up the derriere. Nose with it, all that goes with it, tits and ass. Had the bingo bongos done, suddenly I'm getting national tours. Tits and ass won't get you jobs unless they're...
So we just came out of a chorus line.
We came out.
I'm coming out.
It was great.
Fantastic.
Fucking unbelievable. And whoever plays Larry, I want your number. That's all I'm saying.
His number is 17.
Brandon Tyler.
Is that how long he is?
I hope so, because I don't have to burp those. I can take them. That's all
he
I'm saying.
He is very pretty. I am in love with Sheila and Cassie, my older woman thing.
I don't want to be Sheila when I grow up. I just want to be Sheila.
I really didn't believe she was 30. I thought they should have changed that to she's 35.
Well, there you are. I thought she should have said, I'm going to be 40 real soon.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, because...
But dancers never make it to 40.
Well,
come on.
Dancers would never tell you they were 40. So
there you are.
There, I guess, we are. But
God help us.
She was so great. She was so Kelly Bishop. I could so, like, she was quite reminiscent.
Good show. Really, really strong production of this
show. Strong show.
And a strong cast in a strong production.
It was fantastic.
And well directed.
So you've seen the movie. I've only seen the movie once. And
I saw the movie about 108 times.
Okay, well, what did you think were the differences between seeing it on stage?
Well, a lot of it, I thought there would be a little bit more. They really pulled up the... Oh, I'm sorry. They really,
right there.
They really pulled the Zach-Cassie relationship quite a bit in the movie.
Yes, they did, because they needed it, they felt, to permeate through the whole play, which it didn't need to.
No. I mean, I was amazed that the Zach and Cassie relationship, you don't really get that until way into the show.
Mm-hmm.
Way into the show.
It's near the end.
So it's like, oh my goodness.
And what I love about it is that moment where he's like, you're special, you're unique. And, you know, it's a chronic thing right now in America. Like, we all want to be... It hasn't changed. You know, 25 years.
No, not at all.
It's like, I need to be unique. I need to be the star. I need to be special. And I love it when she's like, her life lesson at the age of, like, 28, 30 was, I am proud to just be one of them.
One of them.
And it's like, ah, I, like, love it so much. I think that's just the most beautiful moment, you know?
Well, I was telling you, I read this book about the creation of... A Chorus Line, which I've forgotten the name of it, but it's excellent. It's just excellent.
I need to read it. You need to find out.
I've read the Michael Bennett biography, and then I read this book about the creation of A Chorus Line, and it's genius. And one of the things that they were talking about with the number was, one, I think the reason it's called One and why the lyrics are that what they are, other than the fact that they reflect the relationship between Cassie and Zach, very much so when they're having that scene.
And also the sense of monologue, you know, each one of them is a star. Like,
she's
each
one
of them is a individually.
But they originally wanted to bring some woman, a random woman from the audience, and have her be the center of the number.
Oh, huh.
So that they would then be dancing around this woman, and that would create the stardom in this person. This random audience member would be a star, and the message of the number would then be, anyone can be a star. These are the talented people. These are the people that make you a star. They create this sort of thing around you to put you up front. And
it's great. You know, when you hear that statement, you know, you'll definitely hear.
Special. They're all special.
You'll definitely hear, and if you ever take acting, like, you're as good as your partner, because whoever you're playing, the energy they're giving you, you know, can really elevate your work and elevate your performance. But it's the same in, like, dance. You know, if you have a great partner, we're going over the river. Oh, that's why you hear that.
Dead bodies
at the river. But if you have a great dance partner, you should never notice him. You should only notice her. No. Like, that's his job. And it's like, you know, when we were doing fighting for Xena, or when you're learning stage combat, truly, the person who makes you look like you're a superhero is the person who is taking the punch.
Yeah.
How much you seem to impact them, far across the stage they travel. If you hit somebody and they stand still, you look pretty weak. If you fake punch somebody and they fling themselves across the room.
That's true.
So it truly is. It's like the supporting staff truly does that. Mm-hmm. Supports your status, right?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I feel and this happens to me, this is completely going off topic, but when I feel like when I'm on stage, I can't. I'm not one of those actors that does well in rehearsal. I just don't. I don't do well in rehearsing a song. I don't do well rehearsing on stage. I just don't enjoy it, because I feel like I'm not getting anything. Mm. But you put an audience in front of me, and if they laugh at one thing, or if they feed, you can just feel the energy, and I feed off of it like heroin. It's just a need, and it feeds me, and I go back, and it's like, I call it riding a wave,
because
you just get on it, and you just go.
Mm-hmm.
But you put me in a rehearsal hall with other actors, and they'll be like, when are you going to actually go 100% when I get an audience? Because 100% to me is ridiculous in a rehearsal hall with a director who's heard it 150 times.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny, because I was watching this two-hour American Masters program on Jerome Robbins.
Oh,
and
so good.
And they were talking about Jerome Robbins Balanchine.
He wanted you 100%.
And yeah, that like...
And Balanchine didn't, right?
Is Balanchine wanted you to
pull back.
No, Balanchine wanted it full out.
Oh, okay.
And Jerome Robbins... Is that right? Jerome Robbins was really about...
pacing yourself?
Getting you out of your head and into your emotions.
Uh-huh.
So actually, no, he wanted it full out.
Oh.
And Balanchine was okay with you marking it, because it was clinical, it was technical, it was in your head.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they're so absolutely opposite. And Kelly and I were talking about that. And she was like, what does marking mean? I don't understand what marking means. And I was like, well, it's when you don't do something full out, you know?
And she couldn't.
And it's not something you really, often I don't think you really do that as an actor. It is a dancer term or a singer term, and I'm sure you're thinking of that, like when you sing, you know, you don't sing full out. But, you know, for actors, it's kind of, you can't really kind of half mark. Because if you were on film, then you wouldn't be supporting the other actor. And if you're somebody else is trying to work through their shit, then...
Well, I love how when you sing with a band...
Yeah.
I love singing with a band. Because people who get hired to sing with bands, they don't have time to mess around.
Yeah.
They really don't have time to rehearse. And so you go there and go, we'll go here, and then we'll go to the bridge,
and then
we'll go back to the bridge, and then we'll end in B. Okay, see you later. And then and you show up that night, and you do it.
And you do it. You know, I wanted to just talk briefly, because it even hit me even more. You know, I remember seeing, we discussed this, I remember seeing this at 10, and I was sitting next to an 11-year-old. I thought she was very distracted today. She was not quite like me. Maybe she's not a little lesbian in the making, or an actor in the maker, actor-singer. But how powerful this show was for the gay community.
Unbelievable.
You know, how much he showed the symbol of, like, I'm gay and I'm proud. The character, the Jewish character, who felt like that, what was I going to be if I was, you know, I was going to be gay, well, I just was going to be that. And then you have another character who's kind of Sheila's cohort, who is obviously upper class and is gay, and but doesn't really talk about it in his story. He just talks about being an odd kid, you know. And then you have the beautiful Paul character, which is what I remembered so distinctly and on stage, you know, telling that very vulnerable story.
And as I recall, that monologue is absolutely lifted from the interviews that they did for Chorus Line. That monologue is not written. It is what someone said. And if I remember correctly, and I may be wrong, the guy that did that monologue, the guy that's his life, didn't get to do it in the show.
Oh, interesting.
And as we were talking earlier, the woman who played the original Sheila, that was her story in the first tape session. And she went into for the callbacks for Chorus Line, where they're using her story, and she has to audition against other women who are the women she's always auditioned against for Broadway shows. And she has to fight to play herself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
screwy when some people can play you better than you can play you.
Well,
you know,
I've seen the impersonations of me, and I don't appreciate them.
But I feel like, you know, it was such a powerful show for the gay community. When we think of, I mean, definitely at that time, La Cage aux Folles was on stage. There were definitely some shows.
Calcutta
was the bit was a big show.
Oh, Calcutta.
When in the late 70s. But you know, we take for granted now how much homosexuality and the gay experience started to be peppered into the consciousness of theater goers and onto the stage.
And here's what I think we need to look at. Honestly, I think someone needs to do a study about this, because if you look at the shows that we're hitting, if you look at the movies that we're hitting at the end of the 70s, early 80s, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about La Cage, we're talking about Victor Victoria, we're talking about Torch Song Trilogy.
That came into the 80s.
We're talking about really early 80s, late 70s stuff that's really getting this into the consciousness. And well, there's that great show from the early 80s on Showtime. Remember that show called Brothers? Remember, it was a gay brother and his other two brothers, and he had a friend named Donald, and Donald was flamboyantly gay. And they actually addressed the AIDS crisis right when it hit. Oh, I loved this show called Brothers. Uh-huh. I loved it. But I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then AIDS hits.
Yeah.
And it all almost gets wiped away.
Well, then
because
we had a different play.
We're addressing something else.
Then we had the AIDS play.
But
you know,
what
the
if
Rise
we
of
hadn't
AIDS?
Had this AIDS crisis? I mean, what if? Where would we be?
Yeah.
Where would the community be? Would we have been doing this marriage fight 20 years ago?
I don't know. You know, I think that's the really interesting thing, to see what axis we would have shifted, you know, where the focus of the community would have come.
I wouldn't have a job.
Because, you know, we have to remember that when this was coming out was around the time of Soap. You know, Billy Crystal was a gay
character.
There's
another one.
I mean, but there were just...
But those people went away.
They did.
After AIDS, those characters, or those, we're going to laugh at you is what I call them, characters.
Mm-hmm.
Those gay, put them in, and aren't they funny, but God, don't let them have sex.
Mm-hmm.
Those characters didn't exist unless they were sick in the late 80s, early 90s. And then we got them back after protease inhibitors. Look at that. After 96, that's when we started seeing that character again.
Yeah, like so, Jeffrey and
there you go.
And a
but
lot of
only after we do something to expand the life of people living with AIDS. But it's interesting.
But it is interesting that this was really...
It was
absolutely a revelation at the time that this musical hit, and is such a powerful part of the gay experience. And,
well, it's Michael Bennett being Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
Telling the truth.
Yeah, and it's really, it's a powerful show, so I hope if people can
go.
And, of course, I Twittered that I was coming down with Steven Rader to...
I didn't Twitter.
Go to A Chorus Line.
I fluttered.
You fluttered. So you're not Twittering yet.
No, I can't stand it.
Because I'm following Miss Kutcher, you know.
I can't stand it. Here, and as I told you earlier, I'm in line at the bank, and the line is long.
I will never
care.
Do that.
I don't care.
I will never do that. You know, I really wanted... Why I like it better is I feel like it's a very active... very active use of sending out. Whereas Facebook to me is about, here's me, let me splay myself, let me build my page.
Splay? What are you, seriously, Ricky Ricardo? What is
No.
Let
I
me
know.
Splay myself.
No, splay. Splay. S-L... S-P-L-A-Y.
Okay, splay.
Like, splay. Let me splay, Lucy. But then it's, you know, it's... I mean, I know people who say, well, now my mother's on Facebook and I don't want her to see my page.
See, that's not
what I'm talking about. I want a tool in which to tell people what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, not that I'm brushing my teeth, but that, like, I'm going to see A Chorus Line and then come back and we'll post the podcast and people will be able to hear what we thought about it.
I agree with you, but here's what's scary about that. Mm-hmm. And I think about this. When I go out of town, I have to, like, redo. I might have someone stay at my house or something, but I always think, and maybe I shouldn't even say this, but if you're Twittering, say you've got your little device and you're Twittering or you're Facebooking or you're putting it in, I'm at the bank or I'm at this or I'm at that, people know that you're not at home.
Well, that's not true, because now you can Twitter from home. Well, I won't. I don't know that I will.
But you know what I mean?
You can Twitter from your phone.
But
your...
what if some thief goes, okay, well, I'm going to follow them on Twitter.
Well, I have a big old vicious chow dog at my house, so I'm not that worried
about
it.
A real thought is you're giving away so much of your life.
I don't think I am.
Who's going to start taking advantage of your information that you're putting out there so easily? That's just
we already talk all the time on the podcast.
Well,
it's not as instant. You know, and that's what Kelly,
and if they break
Kelly
into
said,
my house, come and, you know, bring lube. You know what I'm saying? Come on. Jesus.
If they break in my house, get past the dog.
Honey,
then,
hush.
You know, take what you
Please.
Want.
If you can take that, take it. You know what
but
I'm saying?
But it's so funny that Kelly said, well, don't you want to, that's what I like about Facebook. Like, people can't see my page. And I said, honey, I podcast all the time.
Yeah.
I say whatever I want to say. Yep. I don't need to block anybody.
Oh.
And what I love, I think, and I don't think this is about celebrity, but what I love about celebrities is they're getting to bypass their fucking publicists. They get to just, like, flash the camera on themselves and say, that was crap what so-and-so just said about me on Leno. Like, he's a jackass. You know, I mean, they just say it. They don't have to, like, let it come out in People Magazine
next
week.
And wouldn't it be great when the crazies, like the Tom Cruise, starts doing it? I mean, that's what I want.
Well, they will.
The
and you know what's, but it is.
I love her. Wouldn't it be great?
But it takes the power back to them to immediately not let, you know, magazines make money off their backs, which will be very interesting.
And they're saying, I'm going to be coming out. Can you imagine if we did this? Amy and I will be coming out of Chorus Line at 3:00. You know, like, come on. Like,
but
people give a shit.
But if we could, we could go. Steven and I are going to Sidetrack right now.
We are. We're
hope,
pulling
hope
up.
We see you and hope we see you and come and sing and have a cocktail
Jesus.
With us.
You're right. That'd be lovely.
I think that's kind of fun.
Well, I don't want those freaks seeing me. Unless, here's the deal. If we're going to be in Sidetrack, buy us a cocktail.
That's exactly right.
That's what we're saying.
I'd be like, buy me a pineapple infusion sky vodka drink.
Pineapple infusion. I love it.
I'm feeling a little pineapple. A pineapple.
The non-theater Mommy. People are like, what the fuck are they singing?
I know. I had to explain the whole story of Cabaret to my girlfriend the other day. I had to kind of tell her the story. And so I was saying.
Okay, hold on. Someone in the window of Cocktail just licked their tongue at me. Like,
no, la, 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 la. Say that on Twitter, and that would be immediate. And you might, he might be tweeting as well.
He might be tweeting. Listen to ourselves.
As opposed to twinking. So he might there
be
you go.
I've been twinking, and let me tell you, it's not as fun as bearing. That's all I'm saying.
Oh.
Watch out there. There you go. Okay.
Oh, Lordy.
Oh,
so,
yummy.
Well, I guess that's really kind of our chorus line show, filled with chorus line music and
Jeez.
Lots of good times. I'm hot for Sheila.
Yeah, always, oh, I'm hot for
I'm
Sheila,
I'm hot
too.
For Cassie. Just put me a sandwich the between them.
Got it made. I'm hot for Sheila. Isn't that a song?
Die if there is one, would you find it?
Oh, man, I'm hot for Sheila.
I don't know.
It's time for teacher. I know it is. I'm kidding.
It's
speaking
crazy.
Of bears, hello, nurse.
I know. We are in the heart.
We are in the
heart.
We are right at the corner of Cocksucker and Rim Job right now. Let me tell you. Hot
so it's
damn.
Dangerous to be podcasting, so we'll sign off.
Okay.
And we'll talk to y'all next time. The whole show from the lovely
side of track.
And that will be fun.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.